Hi, I'm Michael Whistler, and I sincerely believe that science fiction can help us save the world. In this episode, I want to explore the thoughts, the advice, and the guidance of a couple of giants in the science fiction writing world. We're going to be discussing two books, one by Orson Scott Card and another by the late Ben Bova. Now, before you non-writers skip this episode, I want to make it clear that what I want to discuss in this episode is really some of the core ideas about why science fiction as a genre matters. Sure, there's going to be some good content for folks who are writers, and so I encourage both to join us. But if you're not a writer or a storyteller or a creative necessarily, but you're just interested in the genre, I encourage you to stick around because these two giants of the science fiction world have some pretty interesting, fascinating thoughts to share with us. So I hope you stick around. This is Exploring Tomorrow. Now, before I dive into this episode, one thing I do want to say right up front is that this is really about the advice that these two writers have to share and their guidance to writers and their view of the genre of science fiction, and not about the individuals themselves. So you're free to have your thoughts and feelings about Orson Scott Card or Ben Bova as individuals, as human beings, as people with specific beliefs that you may or may not agree with, and that's totally okay. That's not really what I'm going to be diving into in this particular episode, so I'm not in any way specifically endorsing anything else about them. I'm just really talking about the books that each of them wrote that are geared towards writing science fiction and the craft of writing science fiction. So let's dive right in here. Recently, I decided to check out both Orson Scott Card's book, which is a short little book just called How to Write Science Fiction and Fantasy, and Ben Bova's book, which is called The Craft of Writing Science Fiction That Sells. So Orson Scott Card is taking a broader approach of like addressing both science fiction and fantasy, and it's a little more introductory in nature as a shorter book. But still has some really fascinating, worthwhile things in it. Whereas Ben Bova's book is a little longer and is specifically geared for science fiction, and particularly, as some people, for better or worse, have pointed out on Goodreads, it is about science fiction that sells. So whether you approach that with cynicism or with enthusiasm is entirely up to you. Why did I want to explore these books? Well, for one thing, I look to continuously learn and grow and expand my own understanding and skill set as a storyteller and as a lover of science fiction. And so anything that has to do with the genre that might help me gain better understanding and grow my own craft and my own abilities as a storyteller is always going to be something I'm going to be attracted to. And these are a couple of big personalities within the science fiction world. For those of you maybe not super familiar, Orson Scott Card is probably most well known for writing Ender's Game, which only a few years ago was made into a movie. But he's also authored many other books and short stories. That's just the one that he's probably most well known for. Ben Bova is really a pretty big name in the science fiction novel world and short stories. And he was, in fact, the editor for Analog Science Fiction for many years, and later Omni. So majorly influential both as a writer and as somebody who curated other writers. In fact, I believe Bova is in large part responsible for fostering Orson Scott Card as an early talent through his editorship at Analog and Omni. I think it's also worth noting that Ben Bova is one of my favorite authors. Not a perfect author by any stretch of the imagination, and I do wish at times that his novels would have a little more feminism in them to some degree. But that's a specific criticism that maybe says more about me and my perspective on some things. But I definitely appreciate his hard science fiction approach and the just proliferation of his books and how influential he has been on me in particular. And I was very sad recently when he passed away in 2020. So I want to compare a little bit between what Orson Scott Card and Ben Bova seem to have to say about the value of science fiction as a genre. And what's really fascinating to me is both of them definitely bring to the table a view of science fiction or speculative fiction in general as an important means by which we can make sense of the world and we can recontextualize these big ideas, moral questions, philosophical questions, and enter them into a new world, a new context in which we can explore them in ways that maybe don't feel accessible to us if we just strictly put them in a very realistic, familiar territory of our everyday lives. And for this reason, then, science fiction and fantasy feel like they offer up a different lens that allows us to accentuate and emphasize different aspects of our life that we maybe don't feel comfortable with or able to quite address in the here and now, with the same level of perspective, with this, in some ways, with the same level of detachment. So by recontextualizing it and putting it into this fantastic or futuristic context, we're better able to step back and maybe even have a bit of objectivity about how we approach and view particular characters, particular societies, and the impacts of choices made therein. And both of them touch on this idea in their books as a really important and central aspect of science fiction as a genre. In fact, Orson Scott Card points out that the audience for science fiction, speculative fiction in general, tends to be very open-minded and intelligent. And as a result, they are an audience that is ready to be challenged and led into new places. In fact, right on the first page of Card's book, he talks about how the audience is very open-minded and intelligent. He says they want to think as well as feel, understand as well as dream. Above all, they want to be led into places that no one has ever visited before. It's a privilege to tell stories to these readers, and an honor when they applaud the tales you tell. It's maybe pandering a little bit to your science fiction audience, but I think there's real genuine truth in that. I would say that as a creator of science fiction myself, that I resonate with that. That there's something awesome about the audience for science fiction that is inherently drawn, I think, whether consciously or subconsciously, to the aspects of this genre that open it up to being so philosophical, so introspective, that it can be so big in scope and deal with such deep questions. So as such, I think Card's right on the money about that. And similarly, Ben Bova in his book talks about how the conventions of science fiction actually set up the audience to be thinking with a very open mind, to be ready to experience something new, to be comfortable with being uncomfortable in some ways, being comfortable with not knowing all the answers right up front. So what's unique and different about the science fiction genre versus other forms of storytelling is that often science fiction can get away with introducing new things, strange things, intriguing things in ways that other genres aren't able to. And that there's an understanding that the writer, the storyteller has with the audience of science fiction, that it's okay that you're going to start reading or viewing or listening, and you're going to hear some things that are going to go kind of against your everyday experience, and they're going to be strange. There might be names or places or just events happening that are completely bizarre and don't initially, at first blush, make sense. And in most other storytelling genres, this is like a no-no. Like, you can't quite do that. It becomes too off-putting. People aren't necessarily on board with that. The audience isn't necessarily on board with that. But in science fiction, Bova goes at length to explain about how with science fiction, that's actually a good thing, and that's actually what the audience expects. There's a certain level of strangeness and peculiarity that's just part of the genre. And because of that, the audience is already attuned and looking for, how are you going to address this strangeness? What new thing are you going to introduce me to? And how is this strangeness that you're bringing in to the story somehow going to enlighten me about the world I do live in? And that's why really good science fiction is actually kind of tricky to pull off, because you want to introduce strangeness, but it can't just be strangeness for strangeness's sake. It can't just be weird for the sake of weird, to quote Mo Sislak from The Simpsons, in his trying to describe postmodernism, right? He says weird for the sake of weird. It can't just be weird for the sake of weird. It does actually have to serve a purpose, because the flip side of the audience for science fiction being very comfortable and accepting of that strangeness is that you're going to ultimately take us somewhere, and you're going to do something with that strangeness. And then when that, you know, if that doesn't happen, yeah, science fiction audiences are going to be rightfully, justifiably upset. So if you think back to even just a previous episode where I really picked pretty hard on Stowaway, the new movie on Netflix, for the big missed opportunity there, where they introduce this really strange scenario of this stowaway that's like bolted into this, the carbon dioxide filter area of the ship, and it winds up, you know, being on this trip to Mars with the rest of the crew, having not planned on that, and having no one else having planned on him being there. And that's a really cool, strange scenario to introduce to a story. That aspect of it, I was completely at home with, exactly because of what Ben Bova is talking about in his book, that idea that you can introduce this level of strangeness, and that the audience of science fiction even expects that level of strangeness. However, Bova points this out, you have to deliver. As a storyteller, you have to actually follow through and deliver on that strangeness. Do something with it that is unique and interesting. It has to be important to the story. And, you know, it has to contribute somehow, hopefully more than just the milieu, though there's pieces of that. But if you're going to introduce something really strange, it has to do more than just contribute to the general milieu of the story, but actually have some substantive impact on the plot and the characters. Well, Stowaway, as I mentioned in the last episode, just failed in that regard completely. We ultimately don't ever really get an answer as to why and how exactly that stowaway got there. Just kind of seems to have happened and to be a kind of a MacGuffin to make the rest of the plot happen. And as such, that's pretty disappointing. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to the filmmakers if savvy science fiction audiences ding the movie pretty hard for that. And I would say Ben Bova, if he were around, would cite exactly this reason. That and Orson Scott Card, who is around, would probably say the same thing. Yes, like science fiction audiences are going to be a little too smart in general for this. I mean, most audiences, honestly, are going to be pretty smart for this. You know, even my friends who aren't strictly science fiction fans picked pretty hard on that aspect of Stowaway. You know, but, you know, there's other examples out there. One of my least favorite movies that had, I think, some interesting potential, but was the recent movie Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. A really interesting, cool concept. But again, really bad execution from a lot of levels. And I think even just most general audiences have a lot of things to pick with on there. But certainly your science fiction audience is going to really be very nitpicky with, I think, rightfully so. When you introduce hard science fiction of that type, where it's like, oh, they're trying to make this plausible ship that is going to travel through space to a you know, nearby, in galactic terms, right, nearby planet. But then it's going to run into rocks and things in space that, you know, seem to be moving only a few hundred miles an hour. You know, rotation's going to stop, and the pool is just going to, like, the water in the swimming pool is just going to float up just because the centripetal force of the rotation in the ship stopped. Now, you know, like, there's all kinds of, like, specific things like that are like, I don't think that's actually how physics works. And most science fiction audiences are going to, like, pick that stuff up. But I'm interested in an even bigger aspect of that, in that I think a lot of science fiction audiences looked even deeper than that and said, there's some creepy stuff going on here. Like, this character makes a big choice. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen the movie. Honestly, you're not missing out much. It's, I'm sorry to say, a pretty terrible movie. Had so much potential, like beautiful sets and everything. But the aspect of Chris Pratt's character waking up Jennifer Lawrence and just kind of ended up being kind of an all-around creep, that's like an interesting scenario, again, to introduce. There's a legit strangeness to it, a peculiarness, a creepiness to it. However, the film ultimately doesn't deliver on that. We're supposed to be really kind of on Chris Pratt's side. In a traditional science fiction format, I think the much more effective thing there would have been to raise profound questions about the ethical ramifications of making that choice, of being so alone and so seemingly in love with this person you've never really met, other than seeing her cryogenically frozen in, you know, this container on the ship. And you're alone, and you've got years and years and years and years, decades really, of just being alone and alive on this ship, and you want to share your life with someone. Okay, that's an interesting scenario that is rightfully well within the wheelhouse of science fiction. Where that story ultimately fails and where it breaks apart for me is exactly this type of violation of doing something really meaningful with that strangeness that Ben Bova talks about in his book. And that idea that you would introduce this aspect and then just kind of be like, kind of move on, and then it just kind of becomes a love story. And yeah, they have the, it becomes a complication to the love story, but it doesn't ever really become some sort of ethical question or conundrum that has real ramifications. From that perspective, I think Passengers fails as really good science fiction. It had the opportunity to raise some real ethical questions. I think it was Nerdwriter on YouTube that had suggested that maybe the movie should have ended with Chris Pratt's character ultimately sacrificing himself to save the ship and therefore save Jennifer Lawrence's character. And now she's left alone. And while she may have hated him for making the choice to wake her, she now is left facing the same issue, contemplating the same reality of, do I live out my decades on this ship alone, or do I wake someone else up? And that would be a much more interesting and open-ended ending with good resolution and even some redemptive aspects to Chris Pratt's character. But it would leave it open-ended in such a way that I think really good science fiction can do, so that it then it comes back to us with that sort of seemingly weighty question of, what would you do? What would you do then? You're stuck in that scenario. Could you deal with the loneliness? Would you just go out an airlock? Would you wake someone up? However, missed that opportunity pretty big time. And so I came back to thinking about like those kinds of stories as I was reading through Ben Bova's book, because of that aspect of thinking about, you can introduce all this strangeness and there's this expectation and this understanding, but there's also this trust, there's this contract, right? There's this covenant in a way that is made between storyteller and audience that, hey, yes, I will introduce these strange, crazy, bizarre scenarios and things, but then I'm going to do something with them. I'm going to do something purposeful and meaningful with them, and it'll be worth your time. And, you know, when that doesn't happen, it's just really frustrating. It's really disappointing. One of the things that Ben Bova brings up is the scope of science fiction as a genre. And so he specifically talks about his predecessor at Analog, when it was Astounding and then eventually became Analog Science Fiction, in fact, magazine. Someone who's often credited as being really kind of the formative father in many ways of science fiction as we know it, certainly hugely influential. And we'll be talking about him more in next episode. But John W. Campbell was the editor of Astounding for many years, eventually became Analog, and he just had huge influence, for better or worse. He's not an entirely beloved personality in all corners of science fiction for some very good reasons. But again, we're going to get into that next week when I bring on Alec Navalli to talk about his book called Astounding, which actually details the history of those early years of science fiction. So for right now, though, just to give you a little bit of context for, you know, who John W. Campbell was, just wanted to mention that because it's really fascinating that Ben Bova kind of brings up this aspect of science fiction that Campbell loved to talk about. So his quick quote from Ben Bova from The Craft of Writing Science Fiction That Sells. He says, John W. Campbell, most influential of all science fiction editors, fondly compared science fiction to other forms of literature in this way. He would spread his arms out wide, and he had long arms, and declaim, "This is science fiction. All the universe, past, present, and future." Then he would hold up a thumb and forefinger about an inch apart and say, "This is all the other kinds of fiction." Now, it may be a bit self-serving and grandiose that Campbell would describe science fiction to in such a way and compare it in such a way to all other fiction. And yet, to be fair, yeah, The entirety of the universe is at our disposal when creating science fiction, and that's certainly not the case when creating most other forms of fiction. We're bound by our, you know, the limitations of telling stories about human beings on Earth in a believable fictional world that is relatively recognizable. I can't just go write a romance story about, some sentient octopus type person on a planet called Xenon and expect anyone to accept it. It's just a run-of-the-mill, you know, normal romance. Oh, this is just a romance novel. No, it's not. You're off on some other planet. It's clearly a science fiction romance, and that's a thing, and that's fine. And I could do that, but I wouldn't have a hard time convincing anyone that it's not science fiction. But beyond that, too, is just the aspects, again, of the nature of being able to ask some big questions about who are we in the grand scope of the universe. And that's not a topic that's necessarily immediately available in a drama, a romance, a historical fiction for very specific reasons. Now, if you're writing historical fiction about an Einstein-like character who's dealing with all kinds of theories about physics and all kinds of, you might be able to get to tackle those questions. The interesting thing there is that you're arguably butting up into the territory of science fiction. And science fiction certainly can do that, and we can write alternate histories. Philip K. Dick did that with The Man in the High Castle, asking the question of, okay, so what if the Axis powers win World War II? What happens? What does the world become in that kind of context? And so you can certainly do all kinds of things like that within the realm of speculative fiction. But the interesting thing is that in some ways you are, you know, butting into, or you're coming into that speculative fiction realm if you're taking other fiction and trying to start treading on that territory. So I think it's a really fascinating description, and certainly rings true to me about the fact that there's just this massive scope to science fiction that is not readily available to most other fiction. And in fact, Ben Bova even goes on to say this: that is science fiction's special advantage and its special challenge, going beyond the boundaries of the here and now to test the human spirit in new and ever more powerful ways. That is, as Bova talks about there, you know, the advantage but challenge. And I think there's a responsibility to good science fiction to do that. Orson Scott Card, in his book, points out that at some point, every science fiction and fantasy story must challenge the reader's experience and learning. That's much more of the reason why the genre is so open to the experimentation and innovation that other genres reject. Strangeness is our bread and butter. Spread it thick or slice it thin, it's still our staff of life. And I think he's absolutely right. And there's a level of responsibility and purpose in that, coming from both of these guys who seem to really understand this. Science fiction is unique in that aspect, that there is an expectation and even a responsibility for the science fiction storyteller to do something of value with that uniqueness, that strangeness, with that scale of the entire universe. Do something with it that actually stirs some of the biggest and most profound questions we have as a species. Remind us, awe us, scare us, shake us out of the day-to-day, and remind us of the bigger context we're a part of in so many ways. And that's what the best science fiction does. It reminds us that we are finite, fragile human beings doing the best we can day to day in a massive context, in a universe that is so breathtakingly and mind-bogglingly massive and in many ways indifferent to us. And yet, what is the value we can create moment to moment in the choices we make, the connections we make with people? And this is why when science fiction fails to do that, it really disappoints. You know, and that's why, you know, I think there are other movies maybe like Passengers, or even Stowaway, that can be entertaining in their own right, and provide a bit of escapism, and be just fine, flawed movies. But there's something about it within the science fiction context, with the understanding and the expectation that if you're going to step into this territory, we're hoping you're going to do something of significance with this, with my time, quite honestly. You're going to do something significant with this narrative. And then you don't. There's a real sense of frustration with that. So I'm picking on a couple of movies, and there's books that have done this for me as well. But when it delivers, I think it's also the flip side of that is something quite beautiful. And that's why I think, you know, I encourage you to go back and check out my episodes where I talk about, say, Contact or Seven Eves or even Saturn Run. Because these are stories that I feel like really grasp what can uniquely be done with the genre of science fiction and how to play with that strangeness, that uniqueness, and the responsibility of delivering on the explorative, the speculative aspects of the genre in ways that are meaningful, that actually inspire and shock us and get us thinking in ways that we wouldn't otherwise, aside from coming into contact with this genre. Certainly one of the things that's really fascinating about science fiction is that it always is contextualized. It's always tied to the place and time it's come from. We can never really escape that. And, you know, sometimes the casual science fiction observer or fan can sort of lose sight of that and begin thinking about science fiction more in terms of predicting the future and all these kinds of things, when in reality science fiction is really reflecting and dealing with the moment in time it's coming out of in so many ways. Ben Bova's careful to point this out in his book. He says, in a sense, nobody writes about the future. Every writer is writing about the world of today and using an exotic science fiction setting as a way to of showing today's problems in a more revealing light. Every writer is exorcising the demon that's tormenting him. That is why writers write and painters paint and musicians play. They are driven from within. If they were not, they would have become plumbers and lived much simpler, less stressful, and healthier lives. Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to ask plumbers. Is life less stressful and healthier than science fiction writers? I mean, maybe. It depends on the plumber, right? But I get what he's saying, you know? And I think, again, this plays back to this whole aspect of using science fiction intelligently and purposefully and meaningfully, and that reality that it's always going to come out of our current context. It's going to come out of who we are as creators, as people, and exercising those demons in a lot of ways. That's why certain science fiction writers seem to write about certain topics repeatedly. It's why Others who don't seem to grasp that tend to end up writing seemingly kind of paint-by-number books or movies, and they don't ring true. You know, you might, as a casual reader or movie watcher, not be able to pinpoint it, put your finger on it. But you know, audiences are generally savvy, and they can sense it. They can sense it when that fiction's not coming from an authentic place of really wrestling with ideas that are meaningful to you as a creator. And that's, I think, something that we have to keep sight of, both as science fiction enthusiasts, fans, and as creators of science fiction. We want to keep that in mind rather than just create what we think is going to sell. And maybe that's a little bit of some people's criticism of Ben Bova's book, because he is, well, it's in the title, right? Crafting science fiction that sells, the writing science fiction that sells. But at the same time, you know, he's trying to talk to professionals who want to make a living doing this. But I get the criticism, and yet at the same time, I think that he's clearly pointing towards you can do the good craft to write science fiction that's going to sell, and yet you do need to come at it from an authentic place of really exploring ideas that matter to you and do the work. And he talks about this more, about creating characters that are three-dimensional characters, about really exploring what it is that you wrestle with as a person. And so I think some people maybe criticize it because of, like, well, you know, he does talk about the writing craft in some ways of, like, you know, you're not going to necessarily always be writing the most flowery kind of language and all that. In fact, Bova is even careful to point out that in some ways it's counter to science fiction. A more straightforward kind of style and voice in writing science fiction tends to lend more of a sense of believability, because you're already dealing with maybe outlandish, seemingly crazy things like faster than light travel and all these planets with aliens inhabiting them and all that kind of stuff. And therefore, if you start getting a little too lyrical with your prose and your style, it might actually detract from it. So I see his point. I think there is room for exploring that and potentially being able to marry those things more. But I get what he's saying. So for the people who love the flowery prose, they're probably like, oh, yeah, he's just trying to tell you to write stuff that sells rather than write great literature. And I don't know that that's necessarily, those are mutually exclusive things. Because again, I think he really is encouraging people to write content that they genuinely believe is important and valuable and worthwhile. And that doesn't mean that all has to be super serious and can't be fun and very adventurous or even funny. All of those things have great value, and you can still explore really big ideas in very funny and adventurous contexts. Soon I'll be talking about Andy Weir's new book, Hail Mary, Project Hail Mary. And I would say that that's going on there. It's an incredibly fun adventure. It's quite funny in a lot of places. And yet some majorly profound ideas are being explored in that context. And so those are not necessarily mutually exclusive things either. We don't have to have this highbrow sense of, well, I'm writing literature, and therefore dispense with the sort of more fun aspects of it. And meanwhile, there's that reality of science fiction that sometimes can be lost. In fact, Ben Bova is careful to point out in his book that there's maybe this pessimism that's creeped in. This is a topic that I've addressed various times and probably continue to address in so many ways, because I struggle with this tension too. I write stories that seemingly might be pessimistic, but then I want to write optimistic stories, and I love reading optimistic stories. So, you know, this tension exists inside of me. This is something I'm wrestling with as well. But Bova points out this tendency that has creeped into science fiction around staying away from optimism. So let me read just a section here, quick quote again, from Ben Bova's book. Somehow, somewhere in the course of time, darkly pessimistic stories got to be considered more literary than brightly optimistic ones. I suspect this attitude began in academia, although it is a rather juvenile perspective. Teenagers frequently see the world they face as too big and complex, too awesome for them to fathom. Healthy adults saw off a chunk of that world for themselves and do their best to cultivate it. He goes on to say, even within the SF field, pessimistic downbeat stories are regarded as intrinsically more sophisticated than optimistic upbeat tales. I suspect this reveals a hidden yearning within the breast of some SF people to be accepted by the academic slash literary establishment. That is a legitimate goal, I suppose, but such yearnings should not cloud our perceptions. And he discusses this a little more too in the book, but the point there being, there is this tendency to look down at the more fun and adventurous and even the optimistic stories within the science fiction world and think of the pessimistic ones as somehow being the more artistically sophisticated and mature stories. And I don't necessarily think that ends up being the truth. But it's easier to think like, oh, the dark stuff is somehow more sophisticated, when it's not necessarily the case at all. In fact, that as I've complained in the past on this podcast, I would say I couldn't stick with The Walking Dead because ultimately its nihilism is utterly juvenile and just so sophomoric. It's an utterly immature view of humanity. It's actually incredibly uncomplicated, unsophisticated in assuming that everyone's just so blanketly, is that a word, blanketly? But yeah, blanketly bad at heart. And as such, I just couldn't stick with it. Just as, again, an example, and I'll pick on it frequently, because I invested so much time of my freaking life. I didn't even get as far as many other people, but still felt like a big investment of my time. And what the hell, you know, you didn't do anything good with it, guys. Anyway, that's, I got a chip on my shoulder there. That's for sure. But I love this point that Bova is making, because we have to, I think, step back and accept the reality that there is room for optimistic storytelling. And it doesn't mean that we have to only do optimistic storytelling, but there's room for optimistic storytelling within science fiction and within literature as a whole, within all forms of storytelling. And it doesn't mean those are somehow less than or somehow not as developed or sophisticated or as well thought out or as profoundly impactful and as worthwhile. When in reality, I think they really are. They can be. They can be quite impactful and worthwhile. And I would agree with Bova's assessment here that this pessimism or the pessimistic downbeat types of stories that have started to pervade science fiction for several decades, that maybe there is a sense of like trying to be taken seriously. Now, that's not to say that every downbeat kind of seemingly pessimistic science fiction story out there is somehow inherently sophomoric. That I don't want to make any blanket statements like that. I think that's the tension we have to navigate. It's just that sometimes we can be sucked in to that in a way that is unproductive and not all that really well thought out or developed. Just as you can have an utterly optimistic kind of story that completely foregoes any real thoughtfulness, which is what I would say happened with Passengers. Like, you know, it turns out to be optimistic in the sense of, oh, you know, they kiss and make up and then they live happily ever after. Oh, isn't that great? Whereas a more pessimistic ending certainly would not have gone that way, wouldn't have wound up with them together, but would have been a more thought-provoking ending instead of the ending that the movie ended up having, which ultimately is a very creepy, messed up, like, oh, okay, so this guy can just wake up this girl he's never met just because he thinks he's in love with her, and then she should just, like, fall in love with her captor in some ways, who's doomed her to a life of living on this spaceship alone with him for decades. Stockholm syndrome, anyone? So, you know, there's aspects like that where a pessimistic ending in that case would have actually made a more thoughtful movie. So again, we have to navigate this tension, this reality that each story is going to have to uniquely be addressed and approached on its own merits. And sometimes a pessimistic ending is going to be the thing that's going to make sense and be thoughtful and engaging and worthwhile. And sometimes the optimistic ending is going to be the far more interesting, fascinating ending. I mean, I don't think I would like Children of Men if it had somehow ended it in an utterly pessimistic tone. Ultimately, it's a nuanced and open-ended ending to some degree, but with clear notes of hopefulness. And as such, it makes for a brilliant movie. It is incredibly dark and bleak in many ways. However, what makes it work is the insistence or prevalence of hope throughout towards a goal, an end that will preserve this new opportunity for the human race to find a future. And as such, the ending, I think, really works. And it is it's kind of a dive through a deep valley and then comes out the other end with at least the prospect, the hope still being there. And I would say it's an incredibly sophisticated, thoughtful, and increasingly more relevant science fiction movie. And that's, you know, certainly not a, you know, Black Mirror-esque, completely downer type ending. So that continues to be a reality that we can navigate as creators and continues to be the type of story that as audience members we can support. So when we see that, we can, you know, make sure to buy that book or buy the ticket for that movie or whatever, because, you know, or recommend it to friends at least and things like that, because that ultimately has an impact. The more those stories spread, the more that kind of content gets noticed and created, and the more people who have influence in the industry take note of the trends there. So just a bit of practical advice, I would say, from that standpoint. What we like, we want to, you know, elevate and celebrate, because then we hopefully see more of that created. A lot to unpack, a lot of things to talk about. And look, there's a lot in these books, too, about just specific, good, practical advice for writers. So if you're interested, I highly recommend. They're both really worthwhile. Card's book is really short. You can breeze through it real quick. Bova's is a little longer, but still not super long. And you can really just, it's really worth, I think, taking in the advice that they have. So if you're interested at all, I highly recommend you take a peek at both of these books. I just wanted to close with this thought. from Bembova, from the closing of his book, because as a storyteller, I really resonated with it. And he's talking about storytelling and why it matters. So he says this: there is no older, more honored, more demanding, more frustrating, more satisfying, or rewarding profession in the universe. The only thing that separates us from the beasts is our intelligence and our ability to speak. Then storytelling is the most uniquely human activity there can be. It's a really fascinating thing to think about. So whatever the genre, whatever the type of story we might be telling, storytelling is an incredibly unique human experience. And that we would then turn that tool and speculate about where we've come from. What are we ultimately? What happens after we're gone? What will the future bring? Is there anyone else out there like us asking these questions? That nothing could be more profoundly human in that sense than science fiction. Nothing could be more, in that sense, down to earth, interestingly enough. We tend to think of science fiction is so esoteric and otherworldly, when in reality, there may be nothing more human in this day and age, in this point in our species' development, than to engage in speculative fiction. So that's my crazy musings around these two books. And there's a lot more I could talk about. I could talk about at length, as you could tell. Hopefully you found this worthwhile. If you did, please subscribe to the podcast. Share it with friends. That would be really meaningful to me if you did. And of course, you can check out the more episodes, and you can also check out information I have around my blog and my books and other things like that at michaelwhistler.com. Invite you to take a peek there. You can see some of my novels and short stories and other things that I have available there. And right now, also, my publisher is selling signed copies of my latest novel, Sleepwalker. So if you're interested, head over to doxanousmedia.com. That's D-O-X-A-N-O-U-S media.com. And you can find Sleepwalker there. As long as the inventory lasts, the hardback copies are automatically signed copies right now. So feel free to send over... go over there and check that out. I'd hugely appreciate it if you do that. It's certainly one way that you can support this crazy science fiction writer and muser. You can also support the podcast just by sharing it with friends, as I mentioned, subscribing and leaving a review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, a review would be hugely helpful. And you can also find me on TikTok, believe it or not. So look me up there, just at Michael Whistler on TikTok. I'm trying to post more and more interesting, fun, just quick content and fun quotes from different science fiction authors and discussing different ideas. Now, I also want to mention that in the next episode, I'm going to have a really fun, fascinating conversation with science fiction author and a nonfiction author, Alec Navala-Lee, who wrote a really fascinating book that just details the history of the early days of science fiction, the golden age of science fiction, as it's often referred to. And so we're going to get to geek out a bit and talk about John W. Campbell, Robert Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, and their contemporaries, and even talk a little bit about the accidental intersection of science fiction and the creation of a cult. So I invite you to come back next time. Join us next week for that episode. It's going to be really fascinating, and I can't wait to unpack those things and talk with Alec and get his take on all of this. Thank you so much for listening and for being part of this journey. Be safe and well out there, and continue to ask big questions. We'll talk to you soon.